Welcome to the golf edition of Hooked on Sport. This is South Australia's Summer Golf Wrap, where we uncover the stories, personalities and moments that define golf across South Australia and beyond. It's time to talk golf with sports commentator Ben Hook and State Golf Representative Sophie Hilditch.
Thanks, Wallace. Hello, everyone. What a big time to be talking about golf. There is so much going on. No person I prefer to do it with than the most insightful expert in South Australia. Her name is Sophie Hilditch, and she joins us once again. Soph, hello. Hopefully, you're sounding a little bit healthier than last time we spoke. My ears are waiting to hear how the voice is coming through.
No, I feel like I'm sounding a little bit better. Though maybe potentially not. My mum and my dad keep telling me that I still look like crap, and Darcy keeps telling me that as well. Probably not as much rest as I would have liked, but it's hard to rest when there's so much golf going on. I'm preparing for Pennant, everyone's preparing for Pennant, and there's too much golf to watch at the same time. So how can I possibly rest?
Just what you want from those who are closest to you. Everyone telling you you look like crap. Just that just warms the cockles of your heart, doesn't it? I tell you what, I want you to warm the cockles of my heart to get us underway with Sophie Starr for the week.
Oh, well, this one was a no-brainer. It's probably a bit late, this news, but it's just 17 years old. It's the Victorian amateur golfer Amelia Harris, who's just won last week the New South Wales Open regional qualifying event at the Link Shell Cove. She had rounds of 69 and 67 to shoot 8 under. It's absolutely incredible for an amateur to win one of these events, and I believe it will be her first professional event playing the New South Wales Open, which, as I understand, we should be one day in, so we should be able to look back and see where Amelia is. But Amelia, she's a top rising amateur golfer in Australia, an absolute credit, 17 years old and winning her first professional event.
Yeah, well done, Soph. Well identified. And I like the way that Sophie Starr is always from the top end of town and Ben's best is coming from the grassroots. That's often how we ride, isn't it? It's no different today. I want to congratulate Leanne Roberts, who after 58 years of playing golf, had her first ever hole-in-one. That was at Robe Golf Club a couple of days ago. She's down playing in the Southern Ports Golf Club. Playing in the A-grade women. She turned 70 earlier this month and she's had her first hole-in-one, having taken the game up at 12 years of age. So I reckon that's something pretty special, Soph.
That's incredible. Can you tell me what hole at Robe she might have had that hole-in-one, or is that stretching you too far?
No, that is stretching me too far, but I'm going to give a little special mention to a mate. Nepotism is not dead at the Hooked on Sport podcast. Great mate of mine, Midge Looker, had a hole-in-one on the 3rd at Cooyonga. Mitch is just an average golfer. I think by his own admission, that would be reasonable. But his son, Ned, very good player, has played a little bit of Simpson Cup and a lot of Bonner Cup for Cooyonga. Ned's never had a hole-in-one, and Dad's had one, beaten his son to it. Now, I reckon Mitch will be very, very proud of that. So a couple of little holes in one from the grassroots of the game. That's where I sort of reside. So if I know you reside up there at the penthouse suite and I'm down on the ground floor, but to Midge Looker and to Leanne Roberts, well done. Hole in one, very, very special.
So Ben's best is now actually two Ben's best because you can't possibly pick one. So you've gone with two instead. I like that style. I will give it to Midge. It is quite fun when you have a hole in one over the rest of your family. But look, I don't know if we can go two Ben's best. I think you have to choose one or the other.
I'm giving it to Leanne. Sorry, Midge. sit down, my man. Leanne, at 70 years of age, first in 58 years, that's pretty special to me. So round one was amazing. We previewed it. If you haven't heard it, go back and listen to it. The show came out on Wednesday afternoon. It gave every detail on what happened in round one. We had a wonderful chat with Ben Walters from the Mount Osmond Golf Club, Cody Sherritt from the Thaxted Park Golf Club. Had a chat to a couple of the stars of the Cooyonga Golf Club as well, Heath Richards and Malachi Marshall. I would encourage you to go and listen to that and find out everything that happened in round one in Simpson Cup Golf. Round two gets underway this weekend at Tea Tree Gully Golf Club. 11:15 off the 1st and the 10th for the first two contests, 12:10 on the 1st and the 10th for the second two contests. Soph and I are going to preview all of those matches now. We are going to start with Tea Tree Gully versus Royal Adelaide. Massive in the overall scheme of things. Both clubs had a win in round one at Glenelg. Tea Tree Gully knocked off the Bays, which was an incredible result in an absolute nail biter. And Royal Adelaide did everything they needed to do against Mount Osmond without really overperforming, I think would be fair to say, with a 5-2 win over the newcomers Mount Osmond. Okay, so Tea Tree Gully versus Royal Adelaide. First of all, what's your key matchup?
Well, Hookie, it's always hard. It's only been 1 week. So
yes.
Teams are welcome to change their order however they see fit. First week, they're testing their players out for the first time. There were some different orders out there, which I didn't see coming, and some players coming into the teams which are young or more experienced players coming in. So, look, I have to go off what they played round one.
Exactly how we're rolling, and that's okay. And, yes, this is all subject to change, but it's just an interesting way of looking at it. We could see some selection changes as well. The Grange, for example, may start to think about a few of their experienced guys that got dropped down to Bonner Cup, may come back. Mark DeMarcy is a very, very good example of someone that they may bring back, but we can only work with what we've got, as you've said. So I think we just take this on the basis of, if you played six last week, you're going to play six this week, and we'll work it out on that as our basis.
Well, thank God we're not selectors, Hookie, because this is a terrible way to go about things. But I like it. Look, I reckon best matchup, it's the Royal Adelaide boys versus Tea Tree. Like you said, it's at home. I think the best matchup is going to be Matt Lawson and Sidira. They're both experienced players of the Simpson Cup. They're both capable of really just grinding out some gnarly wins. And I'm expecting a lot of teeth from both of these players around Tea Tree Gully. So that, for me, is the best matchup.
Good call. I've gone Billy Cawthorn versus Chris Austin. Billy, a tight win last week. Chris Austin went down in his match, sort of returning back to Pennant Golf. Gee, I think Chris Austin's going to be a whole new level of threat for Tea Tree Gully. And if Royal Adelaide are going to find their way past, I think Billy has to win. So I think this match is just such a pivotal clash in between everything else that's going to be going on in this match. So I think whoever wins out of Cawthorn and Austin goes a long way to driving which side wins this one. That's my key matchup for Tea Tree Gully versus Royal Adelaide. Who's your must win for the Tea Tree Gully Golf Club?
Look, I'm going to have to go Matt McMahon. He had a smashing from Cade Bryant, 6-4. He played number one. I think you need to expect a bit more from your number one player. I don't think you should be getting smashed. And so at his home course, Matt McMahon against Alex Pacifico, I think that is a must win.
Yeah, interesting you say that. I mean, Matt McMahon, again, another guy who's only just come back into the side, runs into Cade Bryant first up. That's a tall order. I don't know, I'd be quite so hot on McMahon for that. Whether he'll stay at one all the way through the year will be interesting. My must win, interestingly enough, because you've brought it up, I think Sidira Bottedew has to beat Matt Lawson. Matt Lawson, he'll be a bit disappointed to go down week one to Glenelg. He'll be looking to fight back. If Sidira can get past him, I just reckon that's absolutely key for Tea Tree Gully. So he is my must-win for Tea Tree Gully. Who's your must-win for Royal Adelaide?
Look, it's Anthony Olsen following up number seven. He's coming against one of the Summerfield boys, Adam Summerfield, who unfortunately he had a big loss last weekend. But I think Anthony Olsen, particularly for Royal Adelaide playing the home team at Tea Tree Gully, they need to get off to a flying start. To see number seven come down with a win straight away is just going to boost the confidence of the boys up the order. So for me, it's Anthony Olsen.
Alex Pacifico for me at number one, another name that you've mentioned in your key matchup. Alex Pacifico, very, very good player. Matt McMahon, like I said, I don't know if he'll stay number one throughout the year, but it's the same thing. If Royal Adelaide are going to get four wins, one of them has to be Alex Pacifico. I think there's two young kids in that side for Royal Adelaide who might just find it a little bit too challenging around the tight confines of Tea Tree Gully. It's just something that they probably haven't been exposed to enough at that level. So I just feel like if Billy gets up, Alex has to get up, and then they've got to find 2 points from the other five matches. Olsen's probably one of them, as you identified. They're the ones for me. What's your tip, Tea Tree Gully versus Royal Adelaide? Soph, who do you think gets it done?
Look, it's a hard one. I think Royal Adelaide probably had the easiest start out of the two, and Tea Tree Gully went and beat Glenelg at home. They're coming off a massive high. They're playing at home, playing any hills course at their home course is a tough draw. I hate to say it because I am biased, but I think Tea Tree Gully might just get over the line. But I think it's going to be a close match.
Yeah, I agree. I'll be tipping Tea Tree Gully as well. I think at home they just look like they've got too much strength across the order. I do think if you put these two teams together five times, Royal Adelaide's going to win at least once, maybe twice. So I don't rule out Royal Adelaide by any stretch, but I do think Tea Tree Gully to win the opening match against Royal Adelaide. And Tea Tree Gully, of course, will be two from two if that's the case, and that will be a long way forward to returning to finals, which I think the last time they played finals was 4 years ago. So if they've been definitely six the last 2 years. Maybe they made the finals in 2023 now that I think about it. But Tea Tree Gully for me, Tea Tree Gully for you. Let's move on to Glenelg versus Mount Osmond. Tell me who your key matchup is.
Look, I've gone William Starkey from Glenelg and Ben Walters from Mount Osmond. I just like this pair up because it's a young dude in William Starkey versus a bit more of a mature guy, Ben Walters. We spoke to him, lovely dude. I always like seeing the youngsters up against the more experienced pennant players. I think it creates for a bit of fun. There is a bit of drama normally, so that's my best matchup. That's a match that I'd be going out and watching.
It's a bit like you and me in this podcast, so you know, the youngster always knocking off the old dude over here on this side of the microphone. Nick Hill versus Simon Galley for me, massive, massive matchup. Simon Galley, very good player who went down to Sedira last week. Nick Hill had a win against Matt Lawson. Look, if Mount Osmond are any shot, Nick Hill's one guy I think has to stand up and find his way to a point. If Simon Galley gets it done, that certainly just makes it almost impossible for Mount Osmond. That's my key matchup. Who's the must win for Glenelg? Who absolutely has to get it done for the Bays?
Look, I've gone Mick Phillips. I think he's the must win. He unfortunately lost with a three-part on the final hole against Tea Tree Gully, Dylan One. So for me, that's a must win. I think you need to come back from that and get a bit more pep in his step.
Fair enough. I've gone Michael Munn, the captain. He needs to get it done over Zach Fielding. Zach Fielding will be a challenge. He found half a point in his match against Royal Adelaide's Will Arnold, which is no mean feat because Will Arnold is very, very accomplished at this level. Michael Munn went down 5-3 in his match against Tea Tree Gully. The captain needs to stand up. When you're under a bit of pressure, you need your captain to be finding a way forward. And I reckon Michael Munn, I certainly believe he'll do it, but I just reckon for Glenelg and just resetting the ship, rewriting the ship after the disappointment of last week, Michael Munn winning is absolutely critical for the Bays to get over Zach Fielding. What about for Mount Osmond? Is there a must win amongst them?
Well, I love this. For all those opposing reasons, I've gone Zach Fielding is a must win. because he halved and he's one of the boys running on a high. And I think if he lead the charge and battle down that captain, Michael Munn, I think he's the must win for Mount Osmond for all the opposite reasons. So I don't actually really need to explain myself.
We're covering off some similar territory here because my must win is Ben Walters, who I do think needs to get it done over Will Starkey. And as you said, bit of age and experience versus a youngster. Will Starkey got done last week. When you're a young kid, when you get beaten like that, sometimes it can be difficult to recover quickly. Ben Walters has as good an opportunity as he'll get to beat a tier one player, I reckon, on the weekend. If Mount Osmond are going to make a mark against Royal Adelaide, which I feel like they kind of did last week, Ben Walters needs to find his way towards at least a half a point. So who's your tip?
Yeah, look, I've got to go Glenelg on this one. I think the defending champs will probably get over Mount Osmond, but I will say they've got to treat this with caution. Mount Osmond are going to play Tea Tree Gully very strategically. It's a course that the Glenelg boys won't be as used to. I think they'll get it done, but it's always that case of betting, isn't it? There's a bit of risk there.
Yeah, danger game written all over it for Glenelg. I do expect them to win it, though. Cooyonga versus Thaxted Park, Soph. This looks one-sided on paper. What's your key matchup?
Look, my key matchup on this one is going to be Joel Dunford and Pacey Lyle. The only reason I'm saying that is Joel Dunford's coming back from injury. He's copped the number one spot. I think it's a pretty interesting matchup. So that's the one that I'm going for. I'm assuming Joel's all back to full health and he's an amazing player. But I was intrigued when I saw him down at number one. So I think that's going to be a key matchup.
Julio Alejo versus Jackson Cowles at the top of the order. So these are the number sevens. They'll be going out first. Thaxted Park needs a lot to go right, and they need a lot to go right straight away. Jackson Cowles was disappointing last week, got beaten pretty comfortably. So did Julio Alejo. I mean, let's not try and kid ourselves that Julio Alejo is going to go blow away someone as good as Jackson Cowles. But if he can just find his way to holding his form early on and just keep that match going a long time, I think everyone else behind him in the order starts to feed off of that. So that's the key matchup for me. If Jackson Cowles gets that done pretty comfortably, Kuyonga go on an absolute stripe, I reckon. So that's my key matchup at number seven, Julio Alejo versus Jackson Cowles. Who's the must win for Kuyonga?
For me, it's Heath Richies. Absolutely love Heath. He went down last week against Alan Zinn, who I heard was holding the absolute world and playing unbelievably. But Heath is that veteran of the Kuyonga side, and I think they really do rely on him. And I think they'll be looking for him to get that win and come back strong. So for me, it's Heath Richies is the must win.
Lachlan Oakes over Matthew Hart for me. Lachie Oakes, a former Thaxted Park player, has moved to Kuyonga this year. There's no greater pressure than playing against your old club. If Matthew Hart beats Lachlan Oakes, that will be a dagger in Lachie Oakes' heart. He is the absolute must win for me for Kuyonga. Lachie Oakes to score a victory against his old club, that is just critical for the mental health of the young man, I reckon. Who's your Thaxted Park must win?
This one's pretty easy, to be honest, Hookie, for me. I went with Lachlan Matthews, who's the only win from Thaxted Park from last week. Look, I think he's a must win purely because someone's got to ride that wave. It's the one win of the week and someone's going to ride it. Someone's got to come in strong. So I've gone Lachlan Matthews.
Jordan Sherritt for me. He'll take on Frank Vukic at number one. I reckon Frank is a little bit more vulnerable at a course like this. He absolutely overpowered Glenelg. And we were talking to Heath Richards, who said he was taking on incredible lines, lines that he just wouldn't dream of around that course. You can't pull that stunt off at Tea Tree Gully. I reckon Jordan Sherritt is in this game. If Thaxted Park are going to stand up, a former pro like Jordan Sherritt needs to be the guy who leads the way. So for Thaxted Park, if they're going to do any damage against Kuyonga, Jordan Sherritt needs to be the one to stand up. What's your tip, Soph?
Look, for this one, I'm going to have to go Kuyonga. They're such a strong team. Thaxted Park struggled last week. So for me, it's a no-brainer. It's Kuyonga. I think they'll get the win. They're not defending champs, but look, they won in 24. They won in 23. They're a strong team. They've come back even stronger with the addition back into the team of Joel and Frank. So for me, Kuyonga.
I expect Thaxted Park to win, just not this week. I think they'll find a win somewhere during the season, but it certainly won't be against Kuyonga. I think they'll win pretty comfortably. Let's round it out with the Grange versus the Vines. This is probably the key matchup of the week, Soph. Who's your key matchup within this overall clash?
Well, it's a huge game. I want to say every single game, every seven of those games is the key matchup. But look, for the same reasons that I went with Glenelg versus Mount Osmond, I've gone Robert Liddell and Alan Zinn from Grange. It's the older versus the younger. I think around a course like Tea Tree Gully, it's just interesting. I think though that age gap, they're going to play the course very different. I think you're going to have a lot of strategy for the more experienced player, and you're going to have the junior trying to absolutely demolish it with driver and taking lines you probably wouldn't expect, which sometimes means they could get the win because they're taking on the risks and it is match play, but sometimes it means that more experienced player, won't say older, but that more experienced player definitely knows how to knock themselves about, put themselves on the low side of the hole and just potter around, really.
Sam L versus Alex Hendrick at number one for me. So if they both go to number one, I mean, these are just two class players who are going to butt heads. If Sam L gets up for the Vines, I can see the Vines finding three other wins from the other six matches. If Alex Hendrick wins, I don't see the Vines getting four wins from the other six matches. I just think there are the Grange are too strong down the list. So I reckon that's the key matchup for me, Sam Earle and Alex Hendrick. Who's the must win for the Grange, Soph?
Well, for me, I've actually gone Blair Christie as the must win. I believe he's a Victorian and he's stepping on South Australian ground. I think Blair Christie really needs to make his splash in SA pennant. I think he needs to stand up and say he's playing, he's here. He's playing for the Grange. It was a shock to me, but lovely bloke, lovely to see him out. So for me, Blair Christie is the must win.
Ross Steedman, for me, has to get it done over Ben Pierce. I expect they'll probably both line up somewhere around the number two position. Ben Pierce in the team of the year last year. Ross Steedman, a surprise loser last weekend. I just reckon Ross Steedman, if the Grange are going to go where we think they're going to go this year, Ross Steedman needs to be one of the guys who really stands up, and it starts this weekend against Ben Pearce. Who's your must win for the Vines?
Well, kind of going down a similar vein as your best match, I think the Vines need to get their wins from the top of the order. Like you said, I think the Grange, the depth in the Grange team is just unbelievable. Not to say that the Vines' depth is not unbelievable either, by the way, but I've said this from the start of even starting to talk about Pennant. The Grange is one of the best teams that I have seen on paper. It's unbelievable, but I know better than anyone that a team on paper doesn't necessarily mean that they always get the win.
Know but what we use paper for, Soph.
Yeah, exactly. But for those reasons, I've gone Sam L at the top of the order. I think he needs to get the win for the Vines to get it over the line.
Chris Burns, for me, played at 6 for the Vines last weekend, had a solid win. Angus Dungy for the Grange had a pretty serious loss, got absolutely pasted in the Vines's, in the Grange's opening match against Cooyonga. If Chris Burns wins, gee, I tell you what, it does a couple of things. One, the Grange start to question if they've got their selection right, because I said they've got incredible depth in their Bonner Cup team. And Chris Burns' good win last week against Thaxted Park, if he can continue that on and just strike a blow against the Grange as well, that's the key victory for me for the Vines, and certainly sends them a long way towards winning this contest. Who's your tip?
Oh, this one is a tough one. I actually think this is going to be an incredible game, an incredible match. I think I want to lean towards the Grange, but for all the reasons that we keep harping on about it, playing a hills course, playing against a hills team at a hills course is tough. I think if the Vines are going to do it, Tea Tree Gully, the Vines, or Mount Osmond's, of course, they want to be playing Grange. With that being said, I think I still have to lean in the Grange. I think the Grange are thirsty after their loss last week against Cooyonga. I think they're going to come out strong. I think they're going to come out guns blazing. So, look, I'm going the Grange.
I've got the Grange as well. But, yeah, I've got more trepidation about this match than any of the other three. It would not surprise me if the Vines win this one and could conceivably win it pretty comfortably. Mm-hmm. There is some pressure on the Grange right now. Yes, it was a loss against another top-end side, and someone's got to lose, and I still expect them very much to be in and around the pointy end of the season. But, this one, I'll tip the Grange, but, yeah, I think this is incredibly close. Hey, Soph, just before we move on, after the big win of Tea Tree Gully over Glenelg on Sunday afternoon, I caught up with Sadira Bodaju, the captain of the Tea Tree Gully Pennant team. Let's take a listen to that chat now. Sadira, congratulations. A big win against the reigning premier on their course. You must be delighted.
Thanks, Ben. Yes, look, the team kind of dug deep and got the job done. I think it's not over. It's in the first round, so we shouldn't be too excited about it, but fantastic to see them, all the boys got up. And as a team effort, it was 4-3.
4-3, I mean, it doesn't really matter whether it's 7-0 or 4-3. Do you take extra confidence out of the fact that it was tight and you got over the line in a real thriller?
Look, it's end of the day, it's good to come on top. 4-3 or 7-1, it doesn't matter. It's us end of the day. What we need is just get the win done in against the premiers last year. And there's some quality players, quality opponents. Simon Galley was fantastic player. I was down pretty much after 3 holes, 3 down, and then somehow got up, which is lucky. So I think all the other boys that dug deep, well done.
You've got a couple of returning stars, so you must feel like things are aligning a little bit as you're trying to have this crack.
100%. So the last few years, obviously, we are working kind of, people, once a fortnight golfers. And then we can see Chris Austin, Matt McMahon back in the team. Ben Hallam always been one of the key players for our team as well. And we got the real Summerfield as well, so coming in on board. So it's a fantastic team around. And the Grandi Bias, one of the great players, so it's good to see. And also Adam came and played too. I think got a fantastic team. I think A's and B's got a good depth for it. So hopefully, not many short in a few weeks' time, so we can have the full team up and running.
You turn your attention to next week. Firstly, Royal Adelaide, another Tier 1 club. So another great challenge first up.
100%. So all the Sandbell courses that we take it, can't take it to granted. They're fantastic players all around. stars of the game. I think Billy and a few team leaders up there. We played a few years. So hopefully, you know, we can try to keep the form up. But either way, we just go up and see how we perform.
The big thing for you, you'll be at home. Bonner Cup is at home. I've spoken to Dylan Reid. He says that he really wants to make something of the home game. You're expecting a really parochial home crowd?
I'm hoping so. So, I mean, we have advertised a couple of places, put in socials to let the members know to come and support the team as well as other teams. I mean, Pennant's all about just seeing good players play the game. So I think it's a good time to people to come and enjoy and, you know, have a meal or so, and then support the home crowd as well as other teams.
So Sadira captaining this side must be a great honour and a great thrill at the same time.
Obviously. I was just very surprised as well. I told the guys to make another vote to make sure that they made a huge mistake making me captain. But it was honoured to be part of the Pennant team, let alone being a captain. It's great. Everyone's calling me a skip kind of everywhere I go. It's kind of annoying, but end of the day, but it's fantastic. So I think looking at the team this year, I reckon we can put something on the plate, just try to get into their finals.
Mate, congratulations on today. Good luck next week. It's a massive round for you at home, and you've set the season up perfectly.
Thank you very much, mate.
So there you have it. That was Sadira Bodadieu just moments after they won last weekend, looking towards this upcoming fixture against Royal Adelaide. And so if you probably heard that my three-year-old daughter made her debut on Hooked On Sport, little Molly just complaining that Dad wasn't paying her enough attention halfway through that chat.
Molly, she's making a running to take my job, I reckon, Hookie. She's a talented one, that three-year-old. She'll be behind the mic in no time.
And a little bit earlier today, I did catch up with Anthony Olsen, a guy that you've identified as a really important player for Royal Adelaide this week. Let's have a listen to what Anthony Olsen had to say ahead of Royal Adelaide's clash with Tea Tree Gully.
Anthony Olsen joins us. Anthony, 5-2 over Mount Osmond. Did everything you had to do for an opening round?
Yeah, it's incredibly important. It feels like, you know, for only seven games, it's a pretty long minor round, and you can sort of recover from a slip-up, but to get that first win on the board is really important and sets us up for the season. A big game next week, of course, but really pleased to get to do what we had to do.
And, of course, you're kind of familiar with some fairly significant changes to Glenelg since you were there. What did you make of it all?
It felt a little odd standing there in front of greens that you feel like you know so well and, yeah, quite different. They've made a lot of change to replace 18 greens but also do what ended up being some pretty major work. So quite unfamiliar territory in a lot of ways, but yeah, still has some of the old fingerprints on it.
Your first game at Simpson Cup level for well over a year. Nice to be back.
Yeah, that's where you want to play, isn't it? You want to be at the top level. And I had a great season last year with the Bonner Cup guys. They're an excellent group of fellas, and really enjoyed it. But yeah, to be up there at the top level is where you want to be, and it felt great competing and with a couple of young guys in the side, a really, really good feeling on Sunday.
A couple of young lads alongside you in the team. I think you played at 7 and then it was Hudson Haynes at 6 and Billy White at 5. Both of them had great wins on their debut. Just tell us a little bit about those two.
Yeah, like I touched on, great to have some young energy in the side. We're a relatively older, mature group, and to have an injection, to credit to the club, they've been working on this for a few years at really trying to drive the junior program, and we've got a couple of guys that aren't just good players, but they're really good kids, really good heads on their shoulders and just lovely people, and they certainly bring a level of energy and enthusiasm to the group, which maybe that's what we've been lacking for the last few years, not quite being able to get the job done. So yeah, really, really good inclusions, and for them to get wins on their debut was fantastic for them.
And there's a young Seth Timko who's around the place and I think played in the Bonner Cup last week as well. So, plenty of youth around Royal Adelaide at the moment, which is tremendously exciting. Let's look ahead, though, Ollie. You've got one of the toughest away games in golf, Tea Tree Gully at Tea Tree Gully. They've got their Bonner Cup that they're hosting as well, so I'm expecting a pretty big crowd of members out. I don't think it'll be quite Ryder Cup style, but it's going to be a lot of people rooting against you over the course of Sunday afternoon. You're looking forward to that experience?
Well, it's generally only a home crowd because no one else really wants to take that hour journey out to Tea Tree Gully. So, No, look, they had an excellent win against Glenelg, albeit, you know, Glenelg is a little depleted on last year's winning side, but yeah, to beat Glenelg at Glenelg, they've clearly got some ability this year and they've had a lot of success over the years. So yeah, it's almost like a mini final inside round two. So yeah, we're up for it. It's a pretty tricky little track, and for them to have a home ground advantage is certainly, you know, one or two shots in their favour. But yeah, we're up for it, and hopefully there's a big group around. It creates a bit of atmosphere and buzz, and yeah, we'll certainly do our best to get a good result.
Anthony, appreciate your time. Good luck this week.
Thanks, mate.
Well, so that's our pennant preview run and one. Let's move on to the global side of the game. I want to start with your thoughts on the New Zealand PGA. It was played at Paraparaumu Beach, better known as Parapram. Wonderful course, has hosted an incredible number of high-end tournaments, including the New Zealand Open when Tiger went down there and played it around about 18, 19 years ago. I seem to recall. Wonderful course. I've had the opportunity to play it a long time ago. It was beset by incredibly bad weather, and I was in Wellington. This is about an hour north of Wellington, this course. And as you know, I was in Wellington this time last week and couldn't get out of there. The storms were so bad, and a lot of players didn't get into Paraparaumu until very late because they were having trouble getting plane flights into Wellington. Tournament was won by Austin Truslow, United States player, got in on an international invite. He jumped up on the victory from 551 of the world to 453. It's an interesting story. He's had made 9 starts on the PGA Tour, only ever made 1 cut, played 22 times on the KFT Tour and only made 12 cuts, won this tournament at 6 under, won it by 3 strokes, played his last 9 holes in 4 under 30. So there's only 2 players in the field, Soph, who finished under par. So that just goes to show how difficult the conditions were. I'll probably give you the best example that I can give of what happened. On day one, the par 3 fifth, it's a pretty brutal hole. It's sort of a green that sits perched up on this little high point with runoffs basically 270 degrees all the way around the hole. Anyway, that hole on day one played 112 over collectively. So you think for a field of about 150 players, there was bogeys, double bogeys and triple bogeys everywhere. It was absolutely incredible. So only 2 players under par for the week. What did you make of this tournament, Soph? I really enjoyed it because it was great to see, I guess, a nice little juxtapose against what we've seen in the PGA Tour for the first 6 or 7 weeks where everyone's shooting 20, 25 under and, you know, it's just birdie fest. So it was good. It was good to see a different way of playing the game.
Yeah, look, this is my favourite kind of style of golf. I don't really like seeing people completely under par. We all know that. I prefer to see them struggle a little bit. The game's pretty hard for me. I think it's hard for most people. So it's pretty disheartening when you're seeing people just like bomb and gouge it everywhere. So seeing them battle out this weather, seeing how they played it, it just encourages, and I keep harping on about it, but the encouragement of different types of shots and how to battle the wind, playing it low, playing it high, playing the right lights of spin. You know, putting isn't even easy. The wind's blowing it every which way and which way, and that you have to take into account grain as well as slope, as well as wind. It's all impacting. There's a lot of thinking going on. Yes, sometimes it can be a little bit slower, which is a bit of a pain. So I can imagine as a spectator, sometimes that's a bit frustrating. But I love this style of golf. I loved watching this tournament. And I'm looking forward to the New Zealand Open, which is getting played this week. And they would have had round one, potentially just the end of round two by the time this comes out.
Yeah, no, exactly right. You've identified that well, and we'll have a look at that field. Your point's well made about putting. It is so difficult to putt and win. And Austin Truslow actually talked about how at the end of round three, he changed his putting stroke because he was so nervous about 3-4 footers in the wind and on those very treacherous greens. So, yeah, interesting that you identified that because that's something that the tournament winner identified as well. Cooper Moore finished second at 3 under, an amateur out of New Zealand. So I imagine we'll see more of that name in particular if he can hold it together for that long under those conditions. Jack Tanner, of the South Australians, he missed the cut. He shot 85 on day one. He wasn't the only one to get absolutely blown out to sea, but was always going to be a long way back from there. Jack Carter finished in a tie for 48th. Lockie Barker, again, the best of the South Australians, finishing in a tie for 37th. They're off to Millbrook, just outside of Queenstown, for the New Zealand Open this week. Should be a lot easier setup, resort-style course. Traditionally, we've seen 15, 16 under win this tournament. So very, very difficult to what we saw at Paraparam. Five South Australians in the field. So Adam Bland, Jack Buchanan, Jack Carter, Lockie Barker, and Wade Ormsby is heading over to New Zealand to play in this. So we've got a nice little contingent.
Yeah, it's a good little SA turnout, actually. I like how the SA boys are all heading over. It's good to see Jack Buchanan and Wade Ormsby heading out there. Felt like I haven't seen a lot of Jack Buchanan lately, so I'm keen to watch him play over in New Zealand.
Played in the magical Kenya Open on the DP World Tour last week off to Kenya, which there's some interesting stories about that. You can play a three-hole round with a caddy at the magical Kenya Open course. Can't remember the name of the course. Costs you $4 American. And if you decide to go and play all 18 holes, the caddy costs you $11. Not bad. We should go over there and play with caddy, Soph. Yeah, we could probably afford that.
Yeah, I'd just afford that. If it was $12, I wouldn't be there.
Have you got a winner for me and your highest place South Australian?
Well, I'm going to start with the highest place South Australian because I think he might like this. I'm actually going Lockie Barker. He's playing really well at the moment, and I have to say, you've been telling me, you've been talking about this Lockie bloke. I'm like, who are you talking about? But I saw him at the Aussie Open back in, when was that, November, and just his demeanour when I interviewed him. Didn't interview him, just his demeanour when I like saw him and spoke to him. He was so calm, even when he'd had a bad round. I like it, and I think he's on the upward trend. So I'm going Lockie Barker as the best player South Australian. You can gloat, go for it.
I knew you'd come along. Knew you'd come to my way of thinking eventually, Soph. Wade Ormsby for me, class player in the field out of the South Australians. I think he'll go close. And I want to see Dimi Papadatos get back into his winning ways. He won a New Zealand PGA, I think in about 2012 or 13. He's only 34. I really like his game. I think he'll really be suited to Millbrook. So I expect to see him perform very well. Who do you think's going to win?
Yeah, so I've gone with Lucas Herbert. I'm interested to see him out there. Yeah. I heard him get interviewed, and one of the guys, it was Penn Campbell, who I think is probably New Zealand's local and most favourite to win from the New Zealand boys. He was talking about how he thought the rough was looking pretty high and pretty challenging. Lucas got asked about it, and all he said was, "I didn't really notice the rough because I just keep hitting the fairways." And I thought, that kind of confidence, how can you not choose Lucas Herbert to win?
Oh, I love it. Last weekend, the Genesis Invitational was won by Jacob Bridgman, young up-and-comer. He was number two in PGA Tour University, the college system. He was the number two player out of that. Of course, Michael Lasasa was the number one and went off to live. Shot 18 under. He won by one from Rory and Kurt Kitayama. He led by six strokes with 10 to play, Soph, so he wobbled all the way home, and he gave a wonderful interview about how he never really felt crazy nervous until he had a 5-footer for bogey on 16 and said that one was sketchy. He started to lose all the feeling in his hands. He said, luckily that went in, and he was really nervous from there on out. Couldn't feel my hands on the last couple of greens. I just hit the putt hoping it would get somewhere near the hole. He had 20 feet up the hill, two putt to win, and left it about 3.5-4 feet short. And everyone was thinking, oh my God, he's going to blow this and Rory McIlroy is going to destroy him in a playoff. But somehow managed to get the 3.5-footer in, collects $4.5 million United States in cash. What an incredible result that is.
Yeah, absolutely incredible. Obviously a bit sad to see him get over my boy, Rory McIlroy. Rory McIlroy even birdied the last hole, and I was secretly kind of hoping for a three putt. But look, I don't think Rory needs another win, particularly at the Genesis. I think he's got plenty. Jacob Bridgman, I was pretty impressed though. He was leading the whole way through the tournament. He led from day one all the way to day four. Yes, he wobbled, but as a breakthrough moment, it's pretty impressive.
Adam Scott, bogey-free 8-under in the final round, got him inside the top five. It's his seventh bogey-free round at Riviera, tied for the most of anyone since he made his debut back there in 2005. Dustin Johnson, the other one, who also has seven bogey-free rounds. He's the oldest player to finish top five at Riviera since KJ Choi back in 2010. So it just keeps getting it done. For a 45-year-old, still to be in and amongst that company is quite incredible, Adam Scott. Him and Justin Rose, just in a class of their own for guys of that age, it is quite remarkable. Then we're going to be moving on to the PGA National Champions Course, the Cognizant Classic, the old Honda, the famous bear trap, if you like, Soph. So those that closing stretch of four holes where there's water everywhere, in particular the 15th and 17th, the two par threes, which play extraordinarily difficult, in particular if you hit a big fade, because there's water to the right on both of those holes. I like the tournament. I think it is a great tournament for professional golf, and I think it's unfortunate that this tournament has kind of been, well, just gets hidden in and amongst all of the big tournaments. We've just had Torrey Pines. We've just had Pebble Beach. Now we've just had Riviera. We're going to Bay Hill in a couple of weeks. We've got the Players ahead of us. I just think it's a shame that I reckon a good spectator golf course to watch professional golf kind of is just in the shade a little bit this coming week.
Yeah, look, it doesn't have any of the top 10 players in the world playing it. I think they've only got 8 of the top 50 in the world. It is disappointing, but like you said, it's just, it's scheduling. That's all it is. It's amongst signature events. Like you said, we have the Arnold Palmer Invitational coming up. We've got the Players in 3 weeks. You've then got people also looking at Masters prep. It's a pretty full-on schedule. If they're going to miss one, with this Florida stretch, it's definitely the way it's got to go. But look, they still have some incredible players in that field. Unfortunately, Adam Scott, Jacob Bridgman, and Ben Griffith all pulled out only on Monday.
Yep.
So there's a couple of late withdrawals. But you've still got Shane Lowry, and I think he's a pretty big favourite for this event, which I might be eating my words because this will be coming out on the Friday, so we'll be watching their first round and hopefully he hasn't shot 80. But he's shot no worse. He's done no worse than T11 in the last 4 Cognizant tournaments. So I think that's pretty impressive, and I'd be putting my money on Shane.
3 years ago, he was all set to win it, and the weather absolutely swallowed him up on the final hole. And where he had an opportunity to get to the green in 2 on the 18th, I think he had to lay up in the end, or just, you know, the wind completely turned and he couldn't reach. And that was really unfortunate. Hey, just on the back end of what we've seen so far, 3 names that I want you to keep an eye on, Soph. Aldrich Potgieter absolutely murders the ball, a South African, big, strong guy. His short game has been a bit sketchy historically, but it looks like he's starting to find his way around the place. I'll give you 5 names and see if you can put together the 6. These are the top 6 for strokes gained in the PGA Tour the last 6 months. Scottie Scheffler, Xander Schauffele, Rory McIlroy, Tommy Fleetwood, John Rahm, so outside of the PGA Tour, but across all of professional golf. They're 5 of the top 6 in strokes gained for the last 6 months. The number 2 is Jake Knapp. Now, I don't know that too many people will have heard of the name Jake Knapp. Shot 59 in the opening round of this tournament last year, went on to a top 10 finish. Keep an eye out for him. And then Cam Young is my majors guy. He's an absolute US Open specialist. I think he's going to be really interesting at Bay Hill in a couple of weeks' time. So I just reckon they're 3 names that we might just keep an eye out for in the next few weeks, mate.
Yeah, fair enough. Write them down on the list.
LPGA, they played the Honda Thailand event at the Siam Country Club. It was 72 players, no cut. It was won by Gino Tittical. Great story. She won it at 24 under, so yet another pillow fight setup, which is a little bit unfortunate. Hannah Green finished 7th at 19 under of the Australians. Cassie Porter was at 9 under at tie 35, along with Keris Davidson. And a T38 for Grace Kim at 8 under. Robin Choi, 6 over. And Steph Kiriakou, 7 over. T65 and T69 respectively. But hey, the 72-player no-cut event, they still get a check. Gino, though, huge to win at home. It's always special. And it was her first time winning at home as the world number one. First time she won in front of her mum. So that was nice, wasn't it?
Oh, that's a beautiful touch. I actually didn't hear that story. I like that. That's gorgeous. Proud. It is pretty special, I'd imagine. I haven't won at home before, but I imagine it is pretty special winning at home and particularly in front of your mum. I like that. But do you know what, Ben? It's just interesting. I think this is her 8th tour win. Still hasn't won a major. Where do you think that puts her? Like, I know she's world number one. You can't take that away from her. But not having a major, I don't know.
I had this question for you. Is she ready for a major breakthrough? I don't know if a tournament where you shoot 24 under is a great example of how you're going to win a major. You think about the way Minji scraped to that PGA Championship win, where I think she won it with 3-4 under. I just need to see that from Gino before I'm going to start to believe that she's going to be a major winner in the short to mid-term. I think she's a great golfer on LPGA Tour setups, which are pretty generous, very, very friendly. But when it gets tough, you know, we even saw she was in the playoff against Grace Kim. So she can obviously handle the pressure, the fact that she got to that playoff. But even then, she just made fairly elementary mistakes in that playoff. And Grace Kim, yeah, produced a worldie chip to chip it in when she lost it in the water and somehow made an eagle on the next playoff hole. But I don't know. She birdied 34% of her holes in this tournament. You don't win majors like that. You've got to do it another way. So whether that's whether she's capable of that yet, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I agree. It's funny that you said that. I actually think she's going to win a major. I would say she's going to win the Evian, which a lot of people argue shouldn't. The women have five majors. Yeah. So a lot of people argue that that shouldn't be a major, but that's where I think I'd be leaning towards because it is a bit more of a birdie fest. And you're right, we haven't really seen her nudge out those, you know, par rounds where par is actually a really good result. So I tend to agree, but I'll stick my neck out. I think Gino gets a major this year. I think she's playing too well.
Good. All right. Well, write that one down in the black book as well. We'll compare notes at the end of the year. 50,000 crowd for that tournament. So that's excellent for a women's event. It just goes to show that spreading the wealth beyond the United States borders is a good thing for American golf tours. They go off to Singapore this week. They're playing the HSBC Women's World Championship. It was won last year by Lydia Ko. Any thoughts on this tournament?
Yeah, look, this tournament's been played 17 times and it's been won 15 times by major winners. So I'm expecting a big name to hold up that trophy at the end. Lydia Ko. My car is actually named after Lydia Ko because she is my favourite golfer to watch.
I did not know that. So is it called Lydia or is it called Ko?
It's Lydia. It's Lydia, unless she's messing up a little bit, and then it's Lydia Ko. I use her full name.
You start to address it a little more sternly.
It's a bit more sternly. Lydia Ko, we've got to make it to the petrol station before you run out of petrol, that kind of stuff. But it's generally, it's Lydia. She's a pretty good car. So I am actually looking forward to watching Lydia Ko attempt to defend her title. But Hannah Green was the 2024 winner, coming off a good week last week. She's definitely a contender. But the other one that I'm looking out for is Jin Young Ko. She won in 2023 and 2022. She'd be the first player to ever win this tournament three times. And I think she's a high contender. I think the odds would be in her favour. And obviously you have Gino. I mean, I think everyone's going to think that Gino could probably get it done, but it is hard to get back-to-back wins on the LPGA.
Jeez, you're so much better researched than me. My takeaway from this tournament, where do they get off calling this the World Championship? Give me a spell. I get frustrated with the Americans who call, you know, the baseball final the World Series, and they talk about the NBA champions are world champions, and that's America. But I would say legitimately, whoever wins the NBA title is the best basketball club in the world, and whoever wins the World Series is the best baseball team in the world. They're also by far and away the most wealthy, but this is not even close to the World Championship. It's probably not even in the best 10 tournaments going around, and here we are calling us the World Championship. How does golf get away with stupid stuff like this?
Well, if it makes you feel any better, though, I've just named four players completely from different countries across the world, so maybe that's what makes it World Championships. Just named a Korean, I made a New Zealander, an Australian, then a Thai. So, you know, maybe that's World Championship for you.
Let's go close to home to wrap us up, Soph. The New South Wales Open, it's well and truly underway as people will have this in their ears, so it's probably a bit difficult to give us too much of a preview when we're probably around about 25 holes in by the time you're listening to it. But any thoughts about the New South Wales Open? The first of the, I guess it's the big 3 weeks of Australian women's golf, isn't it, with the WPGA Championship and then, of course, the Women's Australian Open, which will be right here at Cooyonga in 3 weeks' time.
Yeah, this is their stretch. This is the stretch where all Australian golfers want to perform. It's also the beginning of the stretch where you won't have the big hitters like Hannah Green and Minji Lee just quite back yet. So it's a good one to get over the line. There is obviously a substantial purse. I'm looking forward to it. It's at Wollongong, a beautiful course right on the coastline. Yep. I expect weather. I expect wind. I'm looking forward to it. A couple of players that I'm looking out for is been harping on about her, Hannah Reeves, first player to ever win three consecutive New South Wales Open qualifiers on debut, I must add. I've seen her swing. I've seen her social media posts. She's looking good. She's looking prepped. So I think Hannah Reeves is someone to be looking out for. Kristen Rudgley over at WA, she was runners-up last year in 2025. Didn't quite get it over the line, but made it pretty clear that she is well and ready to get a big win like the New South Wales Open. She is a big hitter. She can play under these kind of conditions. So she is ready and primed to go. Kelsey Bennett is my other one. Having seen her at the Vic Open and the way she battled that wind, I think she's got good form, and I'm looking forward to seeing her. But then we've got to look at some people internationally, and that's Megan McLaren, who won 2018 and 2019 New South Wales Open. There'd be history to be made if she could get the win, the first person to win it three times. She's a great player. She's back, and I'm looking forward to seeing her.
Sarah Kepp in the field as well. What about the South Australians, Caitlin Pearce and Crystal Blum, both in the field? Do you give either of them a chance?
Yeah, look, I think I could give both of them a chance. It's a strong field, but Caitlin Pearce is the person that I think should be the highest ranked out of the two. That's my prediction. I think she definitely stands a chance. She comes from Royal Adelaide. She knows how to play wind. She's a big hitter, can hit the ball a mile, and I think that's going to be used to her advantage at a course like Wollongong.
Very good. Soph, have you got a practice hack to round us out?
Yeah, look, my practice hack, as always, pretty simple. My way of looking and addressing each shot that I hit and before I hit it on the course is that you have your thinking box where you should be getting out all your lessons, everything that you're trying to work on, you know, all the tools that you've got. But as soon as you step over the ball, you should be departing from that and you should just be trying to hit that ball on target. I don't really care how you do it. Doesn't matter what the swing looks like. Ben, you'd be best at knowing that.
Do you do that on the practice range, you know, walk off, thinking box, and then go over the ball and start to think in that manner as well? Do you practice that technique?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, always. I think I separate my practice all the time into, I've got my skills-based practice, which I'm doing like dry drills, slow drills. You know, you've got the whatever kind of tool or training aid that you have out, whether or not that's a pedal or whatever it is. But when I'm actually trying to get into competitive mode and I'm trying to hit the shots on the range, it's exactly the same routine that I'd be using on course.
So love your insight, love your thoughts, love your impressions. Always enjoy the feedback that you give to me and that we get from our listeners about everything that you provide. And looking forward to catching up early next week when we'll break down our predictions after round two of the Simpson Cup. And, of course, we start to think about the Sanderson Cup as well, where you'll be a key player for Royal Adelaide. And hopefully we'll have a preview of every one of our clubs over the course of next week as we head to Sanderson Cup on March 8th.
I was thinking that, Hookie, it's going to be very interesting if we're doing the same lineup for the Sanderson Cup of the must wins. I might just say Sophie Hilditch for every single category. Must win, Sophie Hilditch. Best match to watch, Sophie Hilditch. Team most likely to win, Royal Adelaide.
Yeah. It'll be fairly obvious whenever. I think I'll just have to do that standalone because there's not going to be too much point asking you for your thoughts on who's going to win between Kiyonga and Royal Adelaide. I don't know that you're going to sell us anything other than it's going to be a 5-0 Royal Adelaide victory. That'll be about right, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think it might be me having to ask you those questions and then maybe a very angry response. So potentially we have to drag Wallace along to answer some of those questions.
Lucky we do this online rather than face-to-face.
Exactly.
Get on yourself. See you next week.
Thanks, Ben. See you later.
With the last putt sunk, that's a wrap on this golf edition of Hooked on Sport. Thanks for listening. Help us meet more golfers just like you by following us and leaving a review. We look forward to your company on the next golf edition of Hooked on Sport.